begin this morning, shall we? Who's ready for some theater? First up on the center stage is the Reduced Shakespeare Company. They are a three-man comedy troupe who takes long, serious subjects and reduces them to short, sharp comedies. They have created stage shows, television specials, and radio pieces. So please, join me in welcoming, for the very first time to the stage, the Reduced Shakespeare Company!
Wow. Good morning. Thank you very much for coming out. And Curtis, thank you for that caffeinated introduction.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 177, Festival of Books.
Two-thirds of us are here today. We're even further reduced.
Yeah, I'm Austin Titchener.
I'm Reed Martin.
And we are two-thirds of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Good. How many of you have seen us before?
Many.
That's a very good sign.
Yes.
How many people are still trying to figure out what the hell we're doing here?
I am.
Yeah, even more. Yeah, okay. We wanted to read for you today just some excerpts from our various minimum opuses, starting with our biggest, our irreverent reference book. I guess it's an irreference book.
Yes,
that's what that
be.
Calls it. Yeah, Reduced Shakespeare, the complete guide for the attention impaired abridged. We want it published by Hyperion. Bless them.
They literally dozens of dollars off of this book.
Yeah. I think they hope that this will be a perennial. Not a hot seller, but a slow, steady. We're like the tortoise in the fable.
I'm certainly not the hare.
You're definitely not. Yeah. You are definitely not. But we wanted to call it Reduced Shakespeare, the complete guide to America's greatest living playwright. And the publisher thought that was too subtle a title, and judging by your reaction, they were right.
They know some things.
Yeah, they
they're
do.
In the business.
They're in the business of doing that. So let's just read a little bit from Reduced Shakespeare, which, oddly enough, we will be selling and signing as soon as we're through here today.
Right over here, yeah.
Just we'll give you a bit of an introduction of the book. Why have we written this book? Let us count the ways. Because we're fed up. There are simply too many Shakespeare books out there, most of which are an utter waste of paper and reader's time, and the issue needs to be addressed. Where can any reader, from the mildly curious dabbler to the most rabid Shakespeare geek, learn everything he or she needs to know about the greatest dramatic poet the world has ever known? Somebody somewhere needs to boil down all the pertinent information into one brilliantly concise, intellectually cogent, and entertainingly readable volume. Until somebody does that, we've written this. Let's see. For those of you completely uninitiated into the cult of Shakespeare, we just want to say two things. One, congratulations. Two, don't worry, our approach will be very simple. You see, over the centuries, Shakespeare has been put up on a pedestal. In his time, his plays were popular culture. Everyone loved them, from the royalty to the groundlings. But now his work is considered high culture, and the sad fact is that today, Shakespeare intimidates people. In this book, we fight back. We kick the pedestal out from under Shakespeare and make him accessible once again to the grubby, semi-literate, and easily distracted masses. Many of whom are here today. So what do you need to know about Shakespeare? Just this. The entire Shakespeare industry consists of people simply guessing about who Shakespeare was and what he wrote. For centuries, generations of literary scholars, historians, researchers, psychologists, scientists, realists, and fantasists of every possible persuasion have delved into the life and works and mystery of William Shakespeare. Not knowing much about Shakespeare's life hasn't stopped everyone from cashing in, filling in the blanks with scholarly supposition when they can and simply making it up when they can't. It is a shocking record, and we are proud to be part of it.
Yes. And there's many interesting facts in this book, little sidebars. This one is called What's a Groundling?
Yes, good question. What's a groundling, Reed?
Glad you asked, Austin. In Shakespeare's time, the common folk who couldn't afford to pay for a seat bought standing room tickets down near the stage.
They were called groundlings after the type of fish that lives on the bottom of lakes and streams. The actors on stage saw the audience staring up at them in wide-eyed and open mouthed from the ground, mm-hmm. and were amused by the similarity. The name stuck. Interestingly, rich people who could afford tickets bought seats in the half ring above of seating above. These people were called ringlings and were so inspired by the work of Shakespeare, they later moved to America and started a circus. Yeah.
Now, throughout the book, we have essay questions because you'll want to use this in the... Actually, you use this book in your classroom, don't you? What's your name?
Maureen
uses the book in her ninth grade class?
Ninth and
12th grade English class. Thank you very much for doing that. And does it work?
Yes.
It does. It works.
Special ed.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the book is special in its way. Yeah. But there are essay questions that teachers can use, and if you use this in a book group, you can also discuss in your book group. For instance, talking about Shakespeare's early life, one of the essay questions is, in 1552, William Shakespeare's father, John Shakespeare, was fined for maintaining a dunghill in the middle of Henley Street in Stratford. It's true, I know. It sounds crazy, but
it's funny because it's true.
It's funny. Describe how Shakespeare paid tribute to his father by writing the steaming pile of crap called Coriolanus.
We also found a long-lost sketch. Do you want to set this?
Yeah, well, what happened was that when Shakespeare moved to London, there were basically three big theaters. And we talk about the theaters. There was the Globe, which we all know about. There was the Rose, which some of us would know about because they've seen Shakespeare in Love. And then there was also a theater called The Theater. Just The Theater.
Succinct.
Succinct and kind of generic. It's like Xerox. So this was actually... This was actually a sketch that Shakespeare wrote. It was between two characters, Friar Abbott and Petruchio Costello.
Which one are you?
I'll be Costello.
Okay.
Yes.
Friar Abbott, art thou bound for the theater?
Aye, verily, I'm bound for the Rose.
Thou art bound for the theater?
Aye, my lord. 'Tis the Rose for which I'm bound.
Good sir, I remain confused. Thou sayest thou art not bound for the theater?
Sir, you remained witless and deaf. The theater is my destination. I'm bound for the Rose.
But not the theater?
Aye, the theater, thou addle-pated clodpole. What strange malady possesseth thee? I'm going to the Rose Theater.
Ah, I now perceive that we might have been at cross purposes. If I ask if you're going to the theater, Burbage's specifically named playhouse.
I mistook you, sir. I thought you were using the term in its generic derivation, meaning the art form, not the building therein where said art form is practiced. I thought thou maintained some foul malevolence towards the Rose.
No, sir. The Rose, by any other name, would be as swell a place to see a show as any other I could devise.
But, sir, how dost thou know I was going to a theater?
I discerned that thou wast already picking out thy seat.
Ah.
Classic.
And
movies?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now you know why Shakespeare cut that sketch.
Yeah. One chapter we talk about all the plays and give a little synopsis of each and the history and famous quotes, and then an essay question.
Yeah.
The essay question for Antony and Cleopatra is: do you prefer Shakespeare's comedies or tragedies? Which do you think are funnier?
Mm-hmm. And we go through all the plays also alphabetically, too. You no longer have to know whether the play you're looking for is a comedy or a tragedy or... what's the other one?
Romance.
Thank you, romance. You don't have to figure that. They're all listed alphabetically. So we found that to be a very helpful thing for those of us who can't remember what category each play... Since the comedies aren't terribly...
Between the two of us, we've heard of most of the plays.
Yeah, since the comedies are mostly tragic. But then we also have a chapter dedicated to the movies and films based on Shakespeare's work, and it's sort of a viewing buyer's guide of the movies and films, because for many of us, movies and films are the way we first encounter Shakespeare. We don't encounter him on stage, unfortunately. You know, the teachers have a tough time of it, because Shakespeare was written to be performed. He wasn't written to be read. And reading it is tough. Hearing it is easier. So we have a chapter in here about the movies and films based on Shakespeare. And we have a little section just dedicated to The Merchant of Venice. There are two versions of The Merchant of Venice. And this is our analysis of those films. It's two versions. The Merchant of Venice, directed by Trevor Nunn, that not many people saw. And then The Merchant of Venice, directed by Michael Radford, which starred Al Pacino and Jeremy Irons. So Shakespeare's comedies are tricky buggers. It's so difficult to get the tone right. If you play them too broadly, you risk losing the humanity of the characters and the empathy of the audience. But if you play them too realistically, it becomes impossible to accept the ridiculous turns of plot. Which brings us, sadly, to The Merchant of Venice. As we mentioned in our discussion of Hamlet, one of the measures of a play's greatness is how well it can hold up to repeated viewings. By this standard, our opinion of Merchant fell faster than a clown's pants on gag night. Trevor Nunn's Merchant starts off quite promisingly with jazz age music accompanying the old film clips of Venetian society circa 1930. It's an ingenious use of film technique to set the tone, and you sit back relaxed with the assurance that Shakespeare's problematic comedy will be handled with a light touch. Alas, that feeling lasts only as long as the opening credits. Then the story begins and you see it's being shot on tape in a TV studio. Your heart sinks. It sinks a little more when Antonio starts sighing theatrically and acting between the lines, not on them, and you think, oi, this is going to take a while. But you cannot fault the actors. They approach the material truthfully and invest it with all the craft at their command. The fault, dear reader, is with the director and the playwright. Shakespeare, after all, is the one who assembled all these incompatible elements, and rather than excuse them, director Trevor Nunn encouraged a level of emotional commitment from his actors that requires us, the audience, to take the characters in Merchant of Venice as seriously as they do. Problem is, if we do that, we have to start asking serious questions. What's with all the caskets? Why does Portia play a home version of Let's Make a Deal to Choose a Husband? Why does Antonio accept Shylock's ridiculous bargain, a loan of 3,000 ducats versus a pound of flesh if he defaults? Why would the judge accept the certification of the unknown stranger Balthazar in a capital case? What in her background, training, or education gives Portia the idea, or the, you'll pardon the expression, balls, to dress up as a man and give expert testimony? Why does nobody recognize her? Why is she the smartest legal mind in the courtroom? Why, after her eloquent plea about the quality of mercy, does she then insist on a punishment so lacking in mercy that it's positively medieval? And why, after she's been so cold-hearted to Shylock and tricked her husband into giving up the ring she only recently presented to him, are we supposed to really care about her feelings? We submit that these are the real reasons that the play Merchant of Venice is considered problematic, not because of its alleged anti-Semitism. Shylock's behavior is, for the most part, completely understandable, if indefensible, partly because Henry Goodman's performance is so strong in the Trevor Nunn version, and because Nunn successfully points up the differences in class, adds several passages in Hebrew, and doesn't shy away from the play's depiction of anti-Semitism. You feel Shylock's outrage at being ill-used and his pain at the loss of his daughter. And then there's the big-budget widescreen Al Pacino version. It's magnificent to look at if only Trevor Nunn had had Michael Radford's budget and been allowed to shoot in Venice. Jeremy Irons anchors the movie and Al Pacino divests himself of many of his most annoying mannerisms, but perhaps burdened by his name and fame and familiarity remains Al Pacino. Radford dramatizes some of the incidents only mentioned in Shakespeare's play, Bassanio spitting on Shylock, for instance, but the sense that the Venetian Jews constitute a separate and distinct community of others is stronger in Trevor Nunn's version. Radford also tries to soft-pedal the anti-Semitic rhetoric in the courtroom. The actors almost seem to apologize for words that they are forced to say, but it doesn't help. The characters' actions are still hateful. And finally, however, after all these viewings, we ultimately admire Shakespeare's depiction of Shylock. He could have made Shylock a saint, an upstanding paragon of morality, but no, Shakespeare has enough respect for the character to make Shylock as much of a selfish jerk as all of his other distasteful characters, which in its day was actually a groundbreaking achievement. Today, The Merchant of Venice shouldn't be considered an anti-Semitic play, just a bad one. And we cannot wait for the Mel Gibson version.
I'm Jennifer Lee Carroll. I'm the author of Interred with Their Bones, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
So we had done... we performed at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. A number of times. And the first time was in the summer of 1994. Mm-hmm. And we performed our complete works of William Shakespeare abridged and our complete history of America abridged. And it had done well. And they said, we want you back next year, but we need a new show. Do you have something in mind? And we said, well, we had performed our Shakespeare show at the Jerusalem Festival in Israel. And they had sort of half jokingly and half seriously said, well, you should do
the Bible. And the folks at the Kennedy Center said, great, it's booked, write it. So we went away and we wrote, the Bible, The Complete Word of God Abridged, which premiered in 1995, our third stage show.
Uh-huh. And as always with our shows, we want to get, we take large topics and reduce them, but we want to sort of get to the point, get to the gist of each topic that we're talking about. And we also try to do enough research so that we get our facts right when we're not getting them wrong on purpose. And the nice thing about the Bible, The Complete Word of God Abridged, is that a lot of people know the source material.
And it's in the public domain.
And it's in the public domain, even better. And that we have ministers of all denominations.
Fives, tens, and twenties.
Yes, bring their flocks to the shows. And we got a great review from Sister
Marianne Walsh.
Yeah, Sister Marianne Walsh from the Arlington, Virginia Catholic Herald, who said of our show, it's wacky, it's zany, it's a little profaney. And that was a rave.
Yeah.
So we do those. This is the story of Abraham and his discussions with God.
Thank you, Lord, for delivering me into the land of Canaan 417 seconds ago.
You're welcome, Abraham. Are you happy to be down there in Canaan?
Oh, yes, Lord.
What would you give me to ensure that you and your descendants live in Canaan forever?
Oh, I would give anything, my Lord.
Good. Give me the foreskin from your penis.
Excuse me?
Give me the foreskin from your penis.
That's what I thought you said. But I'm confused. What's a foreskin?
Well, the foreskin is that useless piece of flesh at the end of the penis.
I thought that was a man.
No, I meant the other end. This will be a covenant between me and thee, Abraham. You will be a knight in my army. I will dub thee Circumcision. I'm making a wallet. When I rub it, it'll turn into a suitcase. But seriously, Abraham, in the future, you can circumcise your male children when they are babies, and it won't hurt as much.
Well, I'm glad you're so concerned about my children.
Speaking of your children, I'd like to speak to you about Isaac.
What about him?
I'd like you to kill him.
Excuse me?
I'd like
I heard you.
Place him upon a burnt offering and sacrifice his life to me.
Isn't this all a little pagan for a supposedly monotheistic religion?
Pagan Schmagan, do you live in fear of me or not?
Yes, Lord, I will sacrifice Isaac to you.
Really?
Yes, this very day. Sarah, bring me the boy. Here, Lord, here is my only son, Isaac, for whom my wife, Sarah, and I have waited many years. I pledge his life to you.
What are you doing?
I'm killing my son for you, Lord.
I was kidding. Why do all you fundamentalists have no sense of humor?
The best part about writing the Bible script was that we did all the research. These old jokes were new then.
Yes.
We don't really have that excuse in the other shows.
And so we finish up, appropriately enough, at the book festival. We finish up all the great books with one sentence of encapsulations of all the greatest books ever written.
Yeah. So it is quick because there's so many books. We got to get through them so quickly. So I'll just give you the lines and you give me the one sentence encapsulation. All right.
Okay.
The origin of species.
We came from apes.
All right. Interpretation of dreams.
I love my mother.
That's it?
No, I really love my mother.
All right. No. Yeah. Okay. The Dow.
Well, it was down 300 points for the week.
No. The Tao.
Yeah. Desire Nothing.
Walden.
Simplify Your Life.
Thus Spake Zarathustra.
God is Dead.
1984.
Don't Trust the Government.
Animal Farm.
Don't Trust the Pigs.
The Feminine Mystique.
Don't Trust the Pigs.
Ew. Yeah. All right, Silent Spring.
Don't Trust Big Business.
Canterbury Tales.
Don't Take a Long Trip with People Who Like to Tell Long, Boring Stories.
Alice in Wonderland.
Don't Do Drugs.
Frankenstein.
Don't mess with nature.
Oh, okay.
On the road. Do drugs.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
The Frankenstein.
Don't mess with nature.
The Odyssey.
Don't write a book in Greek that nobody can understand.
Ulysses.
Don't write a book in English that nobody can understand.
Heart of Darkness.
He dies in the end.
Camille.
She dies in the end.
Sunset Boulevard.
Dies in the beginning.
The Bible.
Comes back to life at the end.
The Great Gatsby.
Rich people are screwed up.
Das Kapital.
The workers are screwed.
Oliver Twist.
The workers are screwed.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
The mockingbirds are screwed.
Picture of Dorian Gray.
Don't be so obsessed with youth.
Moby Dick.
Don't be so obsessed with the whale.
Don Quixote.
Sanity is overrated.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Sanity is overrated.
Harry Potter.
Just overrated.
Whoa.
Wow.
For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Don't write long sentences.
War and Peace.
Don't write long books.
Star Wars.
Not a book, but Darth Vader is his father.
Citizen Kane.
Not a book, but Rosebud is a sled.
Dianetics.
Not a good book, but people will buy anything.
Remembrance of Things Past.
I like cookies.
I like a crowd that gets that reference. Tom Jones.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Beowulf.
Don't make us read that crap.
Lolita.
Don't be such a pervert.
The Fountainhead.
Don't rely on anybody else.
Death in Venice.
I like that boy, but now I'm dead.
Crime and Punishment.
I killed that guy, but now I'm dead.
Satanic Verses.
I wrote that book, they want me dead.
The Bridges of Madison County.
Don't write that crap.
Gone with the Wind.
Frankly, my dear,
I don't give a damn. And they all knew that. That's awesome.
You done?
Yeah, we're done.
Ladies and gentlemen, one more time for the
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. We'll be over here.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your books via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, and our Reduced Shakespeare Company fan page at facebook.com. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Pulitzer Prize ignored author Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Storyman59. No reason. It is just random. Special thanks to Ann Binney and the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books for letting us perform. And to Jennifer Lee Carroll, author of Interred with Their Bones and the brand-new Shakespeare mystery thriller Haunt Me Still, which I am reading now. Jennifer will be on the podcast in a few weeks to talk about her new book and her Shakespearean influences. You can find her at jenniferleecarroll.com. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 177 531st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Wow, that went surprisingly well.
It went like 1,000 times better than any of these readings we've ever done. I was stunned. Every seat was full. Big reactions. We sold every single book we brought.
Standing room only? Wow. There is really no accounting for taste.
Absolutely not.
The LA Times Festival of Books is held every year in Los Angeles, and if you can get here in April, it is a fantastic event. We've come many times in the past, and there's just authors and books and booths and performances and readings, and it's just really, and it's free. It's all free. So if you can ever make it out here, do.
And here are two of the biggest boobs, Austin Titchener and Reed Martin, signing off.
Booths, not boobs.
Oh, I'm sorry. My hearing's going.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less. So much less.